Hello, this is your host Shane with another exciting episode of Radical Rocks. We're going to talk about ruby and zoisite, how to cut it, everything about it, linerite, cobaltithin, and spherocobaltite, and much more.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at radical rocks. There were fossils, minerals, and rocks and things. There were sand, hills, and rings. First thing I found was a geode, crystals, quartz with no clouds. Agate was hot and the ground was hard, but the gems were there to be found. See, I've been through the desert, found a rock with no name, felt good to have in my hand. In the desert, you can find lots of rocks, cause radical rocks are everywhere.
That's right. Radical rocks are everywhere. Today, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of them. We're going to talk about the story of the Yukon.
Hey, is that turquoise?
The Yukon was a wonderful place. There's some famous sayings from an author we're going to talk about. We'll talk about some other wonderful quotes from prospectors. We'll talk about Mars, a hidden volcano in Illinois. We'll talk about ruby and zoisite. All about it. We'll talk about different occurrences of zoisite, in particular rubies and zoisite. We're going to talk about linerite, which is an interesting mineral, also cobaltian and spherocobaltite, and the different types of cobalt that can be found in different variations. So we've got a really exciting episode. I want to thank you guys for liking, subscribing here on the podcast. You can download this on every podcast app I've ever found. We're there. In fact, I think we're about the only rocks, gemstones, and mineral for the hobbyist podcast that I could find. I did another search the other day, and I did not find anything like that. I found a little geology site. I found somebody who had maybe one or two postings, but nothing that is a regular show of pretty consistent episodes like we've been doing now for 4.5 years. We've been in the lapidary genre and getting people and groups together since 2009. We started out in Yahoo groups, and we've helped with local clubs all over, and have been doing this podcast again for quite some time. So thank you for your support. You can see us at YouTube. We've got some videos there. Just look at Radical Rocks. If you look up Radical Rocks, you'll find us in all sorts of media outlets and social media. Also, Radical Rocks USA sometimes will pop up. I think we have an Etsy site. I haven't messed with that much lately. But anyway, we appreciate the podcast support and the YouTube video. All right, so let's get into it without any further ado. I have handed out my email the last few episodes where you can contact me if you've got any show ideas or improvement or things you'd like to see. Just email me at radicalrocksusa@gmail.com. All right, so let's get into a little bit of gold mining now. It is kind of thunder showers at my house with lightning, so hopefully we don't lose anything. There's a website you can go to. Nobody's sponsoring the show today except for Spotify, so that's the only sponsor for the show. So none of these are I'm recommending. I'm just citing some of the things that they might have put out there. Goldminesforsale.com. You can go there and look at articles on how to value a mining claim. Why eBay is the best place to buy a mining claim, tips for buying an unplatinated mining claim, and you can look at some of the claims that they're listing. Pretty cool, quite a few claims, and you get a lot of mining history there. For example, they have the Delano mining claims in Elko County, Nevada. They are 5 unpatented lode mines that cover over 103 acres. And again, if you want to find out about this, you can look them up. But they have links with pictures. They talk about the history. this area, the Delano District, is well known for silver, lead, and gold. It is in northwest Elko County, Nevada. It has produced metals on record from 1917 to 1966. Most of these are larger mining companies and that are still have current claims in the Newmont Mining District just 2 miles to the west. So this is kind of a hot area. There has been open pit mines, prospecting pits, trenches. There's 2 mining shafts and 1 audit on this claim, tailing piles and other workings. The Cleveland Mine and part of the Delano Group are on private land, which is not included in this package. So this is kind of the spillover, I would believe. It says that NORAD drilled a silver, lead, zinc, gold deposit in the Delano Mine area, which is a tabular replacement body that underlies most of the district. These bodies are large and high grade and could even interest a major mining company if developed. Geologists have speculated that a concealed intrusive could be the source of the mineralization at Delano. So they're hinting that there might be a motherlode source, a high grade source, additional things could be found. You know, that's pretty speculative. Magnetometer surveys have been done. Drones have flown over. They say you could do this yourself as the costs have come down in that. There's numerous gold bearing veins and tungsten in this area, and silver body replacement. In northwest Elko County, this area is known for the high-grade silver, lead, zinc mines and large tungsten deposit in Indian Springs. And the mines that are famous in this area are the Argyle, the Delano, the Cleveland, the Gold Note, the 86 Mine, the Mitchell Mine. And they have a couple of these staked out, I guess, that were drilled in the 1980s. Prospectors discovered this district in 1872 after being shown rich silver veins by Indians or Native Americans. Production commenced in about 1908 at the Cleveland and Argyle mines, which are about a quarter mile to a half mile from this claim, the Delano mine. The Delano mine proper opened shortly thereafter and was in continuous production until 1962. It has an inclined shaft that extends down 2,000 feet. The Cleveland mine has extensive workings, and some maps are available. Historical grades on the underground mines were 21 ounces per ton of silver, 13% lead. In 1980, Noranda explored the district and discovered a 250,000-ton deposit resources with grades of 6.43 ounces of silver, 5.6 of lead, 3.8 of zinc. Potential for several millions in high-grade silver, lead, zinc ore. Beneath the silver, lead, zinc, there was a tin deposit of tin, about 2%. The Indian Spring tungsten deposit is one of the largest in the United States and is located 3 miles southeast of the Delano claims. The Delano district consists of thick layers of Permian sediments intruded by granodiorite. In the northern part of the district near Delano Peak is overlain by these volcanics and ash flow tuffs. The northeast striking faults intersect many of these historical mines. There are 2 main types of deposits, as we said, the silver, lead, zinc, gold, minimum on the gold, it seems, tabulature and strata bound, and then silver tungsten veins along fissures and faults such as the Indian Springs. In 1960, D.R. Olson wrote a PhD thesis on the Delano District, and NORAND produced a geology map of the district. Numerous reports available from the Nevada Bureau of Mines, which you can look up online probably. All of these are in PDF format available to any one who's interested. The claims can be easily accessed by vehicle. Claims are 104 miles from Elko, Nevada, and 233 miles from Salt Lake City, Utah. And they have a map here. Nevada, of course, being a major producer for gold, silver, and minerals, is a hot spot. So there's a little bit of mining history for you. We may have some more. Now, we have the earliest known social organisms, and they are named for Barack Obama. According to David Breeson at Forbes.com, the article under that title tells us that this interesting fossils and formations were discovered in 1947. Large fossils from this India Kara Hills in the Australian outback revealed that this is quite old. It is quite sensational discovery at the time. Very complex life that appeared, according to scientists, early in the Earth's history, ruling the shallow sea for what they feel hundreds of millions or 100 million years nearly, included many weird creatures showing no affinities with any living organism. So for some reason, they saw something in these plants that made them want to name them after Barack Obama, past president of the United States, who won two terms. And it said that these animals have no modern descendants, and they have still to answer basic questions about how they lived, reproduced, and ate, according to Philip C. Boren, University of California paleontologist graduate, student and lead author of a new study showing at least some of these creatures did live together in some kind of a colony. The discovery was made here at this national park in Australia, and it was a social community, so therefore, I guess for some reason, they decided to name these creatures after Barack Obama. The researchers studied the spiral distribution of three common Ediacaran species, and they named them, these three species, the Tribrachia durum, the Rogoconchitis, and Obamus. So all of these creatures or organs had even small mouth parts or had a radial body symmetricness and lived their entire existence embedded in sediment, absorbing nutrients from other things, sucking these out through their body surface from a microbial mat covering the ancient seafloor, according to this article. So volcanoes are really interesting. We're going to talk about volcanoes. First of all, I want to talk, if I could find it, did you know that there was a volcano in Illinois? This is a dormant volcano in Illinois in the United States. According to 1440WROK.com, it is a talk news radio station, and they have the article entitled, "Did You Know Illinois is Home to Dormant Volcanoes?" Now, this is speaking of an extinct volcano called Hicks Dome in Hardin County, and they say, as you go on into this article here, it's posted by Southern Illinois Unearthed on Monday, June the 29th, 2015. They say that it's very unlikely that this would go off or become volcanic again. But there is evidence in the area that many, many years ago, this area was very volcanic. This is a dome, a volcanic dome. And Daniel Hummer, professor at geology in Southern Illinois University, said that a lot of unusual minerals can still be mined near Hicks Dome, which shows that it was of volcanic origin. There's a lot of fluorite around this area. Other mineral deposits are there, such as barium and thorium, which is a radioactive metal, very promising for a much safer way of generating, running a power. Okay, I had an interruption there. I forgot to put my recording device in airplane mode, and someone called and interrupted my recording. So I don't know how this is going to go, but I'm moving forward. We were talking about the mineral deposits in this area where this extinct volcano or this quiet volcano is. A lot of radioactive material was found in this place. A Geiger counter will still beep off. So again, the question was, will it ever erupt again? Well, Dr. Hummer says almost no chance it will erupt. Well, I lived in the high desert and was in possession of maps of all the earthquake faults, and the Landers Fault, much of it alongside of another fault that I can't remember, was said to be extinct. And of course, it did crack and move huge amount. You could actually see the earth separated quite a few inches. So the earth can move, it can crack. Volcanoes can come back to life in areas thought to be long silence and quiet. But we're going to talk about what causes a volcano to erupt. At devdiscourse.com, we can see here what causes volcanoes to erupt. This is because of the hot magma and lava that are in the earth. I don't see anybody credited to this article here, but you can look it up. Like I said, it is dangerous when buildings or people are living close to these areas, and that has happened, and that's why scientists are studying volcanoes. Here in America, we had Mount St. Helens. People who didn't get out of the area died. They were just buried alive in ash. Hundreds and hundreds of feet of ash spread in just no time, just in an instant practically, over seconds, minutes, and then weeks. It just was amazing. And then what happens under the earth, we have our core, but on the above the earth, we have the crust, right? And we have the crust and this magma, which is melted rock and gas. It has minerals and the potential to make crystals. All these things are under the earth. Well, somewhere there's a crack, and that crack can let this magma out above the earth's crust. In November 22nd, 1922, Mauna Loa, the largest active volcano, erupted on the island of Hawaii, and for days, fountains of lava boiling at more than 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit or 1,100 degrees Celsius spewed upward and flowed down the side of the mountain. That island is getting bigger and bigger every year. A few weeks later, about a week later, another mountain or volcano erupted. Mount Simeur in East Java, Indonesia, erupted with ash, hot gas, and hot rocks. The plumes rose over a mile above the summit. Thousands living in the vicinity were evacuated. And so it was a real serious concern. People still wearing masks for quite a time after that, for months. And this geologist who writes this article tells us that there is about 1,328 volcanoes worldwide that have erupted during the time that people have been on the earth. Sorry, I had to get a drink of coffee. At any given time, 20 to 50 of these volcanoes are erupting or active. The center of the earth, again, is called the core. The next layer up is the mantle. The uppermost layer is the crust. Over time, magma, which is molten rock mixed with gas and mineral crystals, accumulates in these chambers beneath the volcano. Just like the magma at Mauna Loa, it would bulge and then form a hot plume if there's a crack, and convey heat and can melt rocks in up through the center of the volcano. Once this magma is forced up through the volcano, it is called lava. In the months leading to the eruption, scientists noted increased earthquakes and a bulging. This is really about all they have to tell that there's going to be an eruption. Earthquakes, bulging, gases, things like this are monitored. Sometimes deadly gases that can kill people and animals living in the area of where these volcanoes are expanding and getting ready to potentially release their energy. And this lava or even just hot ash and dust, depending on what's in there. A lot of hazards. Newly fallen dry ash weighs 10 to 20 times more than snow, so it's very destructive. These tiny particles go deep into your lungs. They can be like glass, very dangerous. Scientists have no way of stopping them from erupting and would like to have an early warning system. Monitoring them is all they can do, and give warnings when the activity increases. Also, knowing where to go if one erupts is a good thing as well. All right. Let's see. What should we talk about next? Mars. They found a Martian book. A Martian book. On Mars, they found a book. It is a rock shaped like a book. And it is on the red planet. It says at interestingengineering.com, NASA's Mars Curiosity rover discovers a book-shaped mark, a book-shaped rock on the red planet. Chris Young has some pictures here of it. Does it look like a book? I don't know. It looks like a chunk of sandstone. They say that potentially this book-shaped rock was created by water running over the soils. They have spent a long time on the surface of Mars, and they're still finding new things. They feel that water seeping into cracks caused this type of erosion. And there they are. They call it Terra Firium, meaning dry land, for this rock, solid ground. Beautiful place. It's a phrase used by sailors upon discovering new continents, but literally refers to the hard minerals Curiosity discovered on Mars. The book measures about an inch across, meaning it's quite a bit smaller than a real book, and took some pictures of it and used its robotic arm to do that. They are looking for the ingredients for life. They're hoping to find microbial life. So far, they have not. They've found salts. They've found things that they feel are associated with water, but no real solid anything like that has been found. Now, Tiffany and Company's Diamonds and Wonders arrives in Australia. If you go to harpersbazaar.com.au, Ruby Primrose Steffens has a picture of an attractive young lady here with a giant diamond around her neck. This thing is bigger than her eyeballs, and she's got pretty big eyes. It says, Dua Lipa wears Tiffany & Company's necklace in the 2023 Met Gala. Now, what's so awesome about this, and the only reason I decided to talk about it, was the pink diamonds. So they had, earlier this year, inauguration Diamonds and Wonders event in Park City, Utah, in the United States. But they're going to be showcasing their stunning Australian Argyle pink diamonds. We talked about this. They had bought several of these large diamonds, and as a result, these have been cut and are starting to be in this event that has showcased the exquisite Argyle pink diamonds, the Tiffany collection featuring 35 rare and exceptional pink diamonds and other bespoken high-quality pieces, according to Vicky Reynolds, the chief gemologist of Tiffany & Company. The star of the show is going to be these beautiful diamonds. And this one diamond that this lady has is not a pink diamond, but it is over 100 carat diamond cut to the same exact proportions as the iconic Tiffany diamond. So I would imagine somebody would pay a pretty penny for this. I mean, like I said, this is a pretty gal, but you know what? All I notice is this big, giant, awesome diamond. Incredible. They have other gemstones that you can look at here if you want. All right. What else? I want to... Sportsman Report, rock hounding in the high desert. If you go to the communitiesvoice.com, you can read this article by Bill Hansen talking about the high desert. It's gonna get hot out there right now, so be extremely careful. This article was written in May, but man, it can get really hot out there. Out in the desert, it says this new material, you can find desert palm, tree root, and other things. But you want to get out there before it gets too hot. You can find agate, petrified wood, wonderstone, and many other things. They say you can go to California for rock hounding. The Falcon guidebooks will give you GPS coordinates. Also using MindDat.org, which is something I've recommended. He tells you how to dress, what kind of equipment to buy. He also says that the Sonoma County Rogue Rockhounds is a great place to get field trips. Bill Hansen is a Sonoma County native and belongs to the Sonoma County Mycological Association. So, yeah, the Santa Rosa Mineral and Gem Society also is another great resource. All right, what else? What else? What else? Should we get into a mineral? Let's talk about cobalt, because, man, there's a lot of neat stuff about cobalt. I went down the rabbit hole on this. Cobalt-bearing calcite is known as cobaltian. It's C-O-L-B-A-L-T-O-A-N, cobaltian. But it also, cobalt can be a mineral appearing on dolomite, which is very rare, and you can pretty much only find nice specimens in Africa. But the calcite specimens of cobalt can be found all over. The Congo is a place where some beautiful specimens have been found. Also Morocco, if you want to go check that out. MindDat.org, you can look up cobalt-bearing calcite, and you're going to find out that it is a variety of calcite that is containing the cobalt mineral. Some beautiful specimens can be found at the Cape Comitia mine in Italy and other areas. It is a cobalt-bearing calcite. And scroll down here a little bit more information on it. I think it's fairly soft, maybe 2.5 on the hardness scale. But this can be found in Canada, on the west coast of the United States, a little bit here on the west coast of South America. We'll just read a few areas here. Mongolia, Australia, Canada, China, Czechoslovakia, Congo, Finland, France, Germany, India, Italy, Mexico, Morocco, Peru, Poland, Romania, Russia, Slovakia, Solomon Islands, Spain, Switzerland, UK, USA, and such. Some really good ones can be found in New Mexico, Nevada, Arizona, and Utah as well. Let's see if we can find a little bit more on this here. I see my wife has just gotten home. This is a beautiful pink color, this cobalt. I would have thought it would be blue because cobalt glass is typically blue. When you think of cobalt, you typically think of blue. It comes in light pink and dark pink. So, all right, what else? I cannot figure out what page I'm on. Man, I hope I didn't erase stuff. It almost looks like I did. Oh, man. Here's another. Oh, okay. That's weird. All right, here we go. Okay, I'm having a heart attack here. All right, the next type of cobalt is a spherocobaltite, and that is S-P-H-E-R-O-C-O-L-B-A-L-T-I-T-E, and this will form more of crystals of cobalt that you can see with the magnifying glass or possibly even the naked eye. These, again, are very pink, a light pink to a very dark blood red watermelon type pink, and some beautiful specimens found in Morocco, the Congo. Again, hardness of this is 3 to 4. Crystal system is trigonal, and it is often associated with or confused with cobaltian calcite or cobaltian dolomite, which we talked about earlier. because the colors are quite similar. But again, you're going to get more crystal formation in this. It's not absorbed in the calcite on a lesser visibility. Probably have to look at it under a microscope to see it really show up as crystals under that. It is vitreous, subvitreous, waxy. So this is pretty amazing. It is brittle. And this can be found in a few locations. Australia, Canada, Chile, China, Congo. A lot of areas in Congo. Germany, Greece, Italy, Japan, Mexico, Morocco, Slovakia, Spain, Switzerland, USA, and Zambia in the Copper Belt. So this is some really interesting minerals. If you want to check them out, I think you will like them. Linerite. Now, linerite is a very unusual mineral. It is a blue, like an azurite, and forms in spectacular crystals. It is believed that there may have been a few crystals big enough to cut. But for the most part, these are not big enough to cut. They are too small. But there's a desirability to find some bigger ones and cut them. Linerite can be found at the Grand Reef Mine in Arizona, USA. And this area is where some of the best ones are found. Also, it can be found in Italy and also in Germany. Some smaller, more cubicular type crystals can be found there. But in the Italy and Arizona, these ones are much more elongated and quite beautiful little thumbnail pieces. Now, they're only about 2.5 on the hardness scale. And they are a sulfite. They are associated with chromates, molybdates, and wolframates. And without H2O, it says, so they don't feel there was a water action as these crystallize. They could be associated with other things that had water. They are pale blue to dark blue, and again, very brittle. These can be found, and I think I have some more information on this. These can be found, according to MineDat.com, Argentina, Australia, South Wales, South Australia, Queensland, Northern Territory, Tasmania, a lot in Australia, Western Australia, Austria, Syria, Belgium, Bolivia, Bulgaria, Canada, probably a lot of copper areas, Chile, China, Czech, Egypt, Europe, Finland, France. And of course, these are probably not as spectacular as the ones that we talked about where the real beauties come from. But yeah, quite a few areas where they can be found, at least have been identified. Iran, Ireland, Isle of Man, Italy, of course, was a great spot for it. And they actually have a ton of areas. Japan, even. Kazakhstan, Mexico, Morocco, Miramar, Namibia, New Zealand, Norway, Pakistan, Portugal, Romania, Russia, Slovakia, Spain, I'm probably missing a few as I scroll through here, Switzerland, Thailand even. Wow, quite a list here. It's just an abundant list. The value of this mineral, it is rare. The blue color of linerite is magnificent, and it is a pity that large fastable rough has not been found. According to the International Gem Society at gemsociety.org, by Joel E. Arim, Ph.D. and FGA. He says that some of these specimens they have pictures of here are quite lovely. The streak is pale blue. The occurrence is a secondary mineral in the oxidized zones of lead-copper deposits. So, Socorro County, New Mexico, California, Montana, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, England, Scotland, Spain, Germany, Russia, Argentina, Peru, Japan, Austria, Namibia, things like that. Some great areas. Arizona, large crystals of fine color. Like we mentioned, this is a great spot. Maybe some of them could come out that could be faceted. And it was named after the locality in Spain, Linares. All right. Now, I want to talk about I'm gonna talk about zoisite, ruby and zoisite, and then I'm gonna do some mining quotes and verses. If you're interested in that, I've been telling a few of those type of history, so I will do that after the zoisite. If you want to hold out and listen to that. So first of all, at ArizonaLapidary.com, I saw that they had some ruby and zoisite there for sale. I said, you know, I think I want to talk about this. And so I did. And I think I just erased one of the pages I had. But zoisite, typically the ruby zoisite comes from Tanzania. And it comes from the Mandrandra mine. And it is green zoisite with red ruby. This stuff is not easy to cut. Zoisite does not occur as euhedral crystals. It is represented in many collections. Nice contrasting matrix to less well-formed red corundum crystals. The combination has given the rock the name eneolite, after the mesal word for green. Eneolite is actively mined as a decorative stone and cabochoning material, and it is got a 150 meter deep pit with a 26 mine team in 2005 anyway. It has become a important carving material, and there are several small scale mines in the area. Around 50 people were working the mines dealing with this material. Very narrow zone in serpentized periodontite, and which is an olivine. And there is chrome spindle and eneolite. And this is kind of an altered metamorphic type of thing that took place, ending up with the bright red and green colors of ruby and zoisite due to the small chrome content originating from altered chrome spindle. Now, we're going to talk about how to cut this material, but I want to let you know zoisite is not typically collected as a green mineral. It actually is a spectacular blue mineral. In Tanzania, you can find this beautiful blue zoisite also. Known as, it is just beautiful, and also sometimes purple. You can find it gray and greenish colored as well, light blue to dark blue. It's even been found in red. This is a crystal formation, typically elongated, but in this case, the crystals are forming very small and off to the sides. The stone can chip. It's not easy to cabochon this material. Now, if you go to jimselect.com, you can read by ruby zoisite. Jim Select, you can read this article about zoisite. And I think there might be someone credited with this at the bottom. Let me check. Nope, don't see anything. So they tell you about this material. I think I have a little piece of it. You've got a combination of ruby and zoisite. So when you are, we'll talk more about polishing it, but it's only found mostly in Tanzania, and the deposits were first heard, according to this, in 1949, and they thought it was a bunch of rubies, but it ended up being more of a zoisite, and it can polish up and look really beautiful. Identifying ruby zoisite. Distinct molted colors and appearance. Rocks are primarily composed of green zoisite. Larger inclusions of black hornblende and red ruby create interesting patterns within the matrix of the rock. Hardness between 6.5 and 7, unlike ruby, which would be just 9. I guess maybe they're averaging it out. I don't know. And then here it says it was first discovered in 1954 along the Longido mining district of Tanzania. So it is still the world's only source for ruby and zoisite. Typically pretty affordable so far. It has not gone up to, I know it's gone up since I first saw it on the market 20 years ago, but it can be carved into animals and other decorative things. Beads are quite popular and such. Ruby zoisite is not known to be treated or enhanced in any way. Ruby zoisite and other related gemstones, of course, it has the corundum and the hornblende. And there are other types of zoisite, which we talked about, like tanzanite, thulite, pink zoisite, blue, and things like that. Other corundum can be red, blue, purple, white, and different colors of rubies are out there. There's mythology on this, designing ideas. Care and cleaning. It says avoid exposure to strong heat, direct sunlight. Well, that's kind of hard to do. Don't use acid, bleach, or other chemicals. Avoid the use of ultrasonic steam cleaners. Just use soapy water and a cloth. All right, now let's talk about how to cut this. At ganoksin.com. We see a lapidary question, ruby and zoisite. People here are trying to find ways of polishing it. And Mark Zerinsky 1 says he has two problems, the high amount of internal cracks and the grain orientation. So when he's polishing with the grain, he recommends that you go 600, 1200, 3000, 8000, and 14000, and 50 to 100,000 if you are really wanting a spectacular polish. Subsurface breakage, the only way to solve this is by sawing away the piece, or you could use a hardness treatment, which I've done videos on that in YouTube. And then it says, when you are sawing a piece, try to go from the inner piece of the stone, avoiding those within the district of 10% the diameter of the stone, and stay away. So how that works out, I don't know. The best one that I saw in here was Douglas Tourette, GJ, lapidary artist and designer. He says here, the challenge of this material is that it is composed of minerals of dissimilar hardness, and the matrix tends to undercut at about the same rate that the harder material polishes. Your best bet is going to be using a plated or sintered steel and diamond wheel with a copious water flow and taking your time. So this is a light touch. Otherwise, what will happen is you'll eat up the soft stone and the hard stone will stay on top, and you won't have a nice shape to your cabochon. And I'll go back to what he says. Despite what may be an innate desire to get the stone over and done with already, I think you'll find you'll do much better to go back to the 600 and 1200 mesh steel wheels, followed by 3,000, 14,000 wet diamond belts, finished with a 50,000 mesh compound, either a Pelton or synthetic canvas belt or disc. The trick with chrome zoisite seems to be to focus on the matrix, not the rubies. If you cut and polish ratably, that is, start cutting and polishing from the matrix and work in toward the center of each ruby crystal, you'll be less apt to develop these separations where the two meet. Also, be sure to use a gentler touch than you would with other materials. Treat the zoisite as if it were some sort of chalky turquoise from an old Kingman mine, and you're trying to keep the brown matrix from washing away. The feel and technique are similar. But last but not least, try to keep in mind that massive zoisites, both this and thulite, are essentially sandstones made up of mineral which individual grains in themselves have different hardness depending upon their direction. So what may be happening is treated as a solid rather than a composite, and learn the characteristics of how this is put together. So it's not easy to work with, but it can be done. Possibly you could use a hardener. I've done videos on those, and make the material a little bit harder and not fall apart as much. So there is another one. And then someone else says Holy Cow Polish. It's a brand name polish called Holy Cow. I've never heard of it, but somebody recommends that. I don't know if they're just trying to sell it, if it's good, if it's bad, if it's, you know, I don't know what it is. All right. Tampa Crystals. Let's see. Why did I have this here? I don't know why. Let me look and see here. Yeah, I don't know. I think it just popped up. All right. I want to talk about... here's another one I forgot. The meaning and history of the name Jasper at gbtimes.com. We can see here that this originated from a Persian word meaning treasure. It's also found in the Bible. It means to polish or be beautiful. The Greek word related to jasper refers to a semi-precious stone found in different colors, believed to have healing powers by ancient Egyptians and Greeks. Beautiful. Jasper is unique and timeless, and I guess it would make a great name too. All right. Now, I want to tell you this quote by Robert W. Service. Now, this book is called The Spell... Oh, boy. And all I do is touch my computer and it goes wonkers. I hope I didn't erase that. Brother. Let's see. I am going to find this because I can almost remember this. I tell you, I am having a time today. Okay. Robert W. Service, and the book is called The Spell of the Yukon and Other Verses. Now, here's a quote. I always think I'm quoting this saying, and here's what I say. I say, it's not so much the gold that's haunting me as is the searching for it. Okay? So basically, I think once, if you're first mining for gold and you got gold fever or you're just greedy, then you just want gold. Gold, 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 gold. But at some point, you smash your hand, you fall down, you get tired, you get kicked in the butt, and you start to ask yourself, why am I here? Am I really going to get any gold? Why would I stick with this? Okay. Now, as a hobbyist especially. But then you look around you and you see where you're at. It could be a beautiful desert. It could be the forest. It could be a beach. It could be the wildlife that comes by, the sunsets, the sunrises, the beauty of living out there or camping out there. So Robert W. Service, this is his famous saying. He says, there's gold, and it's haunting and haunting. It's luring me on as of old. Yet it isn't the gold I'm wanting, so much as just finding the gold. It's a great, big, broad land way up yonder. It's the forest where silence has lease. It's the beauty that thrills me with wonder. It's the stillness that fills me with peace. So I love that quote. I've kind of changed it and simplified it. But it's not so much the rock hounding. It's not so much. It's great when you find something. But take the time to appreciate the adventure of it all, the beauty of it all. Like he says here, the forest and the beauty, the stillness of the air, things like that, the starry nights that you can sleep under. All those things make the rock hounding or gold prospecting much more worth it. Now, with that, I have one more story. This is from my friend, Cole Younger. You can look him up on Facebook if you want, Cole Younger. And he's talking about an assay, how to do an assay. So let me read you the little story that he told about this assay. I'll try to not slaughter it. So he says, having taken Charles Bolcher's torch assay course, I became proficient in the process. This process involves homemade carbon crucibles to melt your ore in. To manufacture these, I use a 10-pound bag of charcoal briquettes dissolved in water. Add to this a cup of wood glue. And when the consistency is like Play-Doh, I use muffin pans and a trailer hitch ball in my drill press to press these into crucibles for this assay process. Now I discover that the spray of Pam in the muffin pans permits easy removal of the crucibles once they've dried, which normally takes several days. Having made about 20 dozen, I set them out to dry. And after I had them set up good, I flipped the pans to let them cure for another day. Upon my return from a distance, my crucibles appear to have little mine dumps all over them. And I swore I even saw a couple head frames. Now this piqued my curiosity, and I picked up the pace. Getting closer, I discovered that an ant somewhere had told his buddies about this Pam and charcoal mine, and every one of my crucibles had audits, drifts, shafts, and miniature mine waste, and thousands of tiny little ant miners. Not one of them had a hard hat on. It was only a matter of time before they applied for a mineral patent, so I removed their mines and now use the oven to dry the crucibles. A really great story. Sometimes you get a different point of view from a prospector, but sometimes you just got to kind of laugh at the way things end up and learn from it. I like the way he puts his life stories into words for us to enjoy. So guys, until next time, thanks for stopping by. Remember, rockhounds don't die, they petrify.